This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, Place to Be Nation universe, welcome back to our monthly reaction show series, and this is for Backlash, the first pay-per-view after WrestleMania that is on the normal schedule. Greatest Royal Rumble ever, of course, was a different type of show. So I guess we won't really count that. But anyway, I'm your host, Chris Zellner, joined as always by the Oracle of the WWE, Mr. Devin Hales. And Devin, we had quite the show tonight, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. You know, I mean, we'll talk about this a little bit throughout the show and after it. But man, These agents really like sitting in holds for 3, 4, 5 minutes straight. Because Jesus Christ. But we'll get to that. It was a slog.
Yeah, I mean, these co-branded pay-per-views are obviously now going to be going for 3.5 hours. I think that's something we're going to resign the fact to. And if you're going to do it in like that, they definitely need to change up the agenting. And I think the word for this show is tone deaf. There's a lot of tone deafness going on in the WWE right now in a lot of ways. Laying out matches, booking of certain people, trying to read the crowds. I mean, they use the term shake-up, a superstar shake-up. There needs to be a complete shake-up in a lot of things right now. It's just weird. This is a very weird thing, and this show is just, I don't know. And it's like I just tweeted out before we really started recording the show. It's like, it's a telling statement when the co-opted media is shitting on the show. That should tell you something right there. When people like Justin Labar and Brian Campbell of CBS and some of the others, when they're out there, you know, making jokes about the show and talking about how bad it was, that's not a good sign, because these people are they're your media that's supposed to be, you know, playing that house organ. And when they come out against you, that's a telling statement. And this was just a weird show overall. Now, it started out really good. The pre-show match was Bayley versus Ruby Riott. Ruby Riott was really strong in this match. Bayley, I think, may have knocked herself loopy for real on that turnbuckle spot, because she was not the same afterwards. She had a lot of sloppy, shaky parts in this match after that. So she definitely was off her game, and that may have been the reason why. But Liv and Sarah get involved, of course. And the Riot Squad's a solid tandem, and glad to see that they're still together. So I hope they stay together for a while. But Ruby gets the win, and Ruby has beaten Sasha and Bayley in less than a week. So that's a hell. No matter how you do it, you know, that's two big scouts for her. And I guess she's going to be ready. I don't know if she's going to get Nia just yet, but I would think that she's the favorite to win the Women's Money in the Bank. So your thoughts on the booking here and Bayley in general in this match and how off she was?
The match was good. Very solid. I think the Sasha match on Raw was a good bit better, actually. But this match was good. Ruby Riott was really good in this. I think she doesn't get enough credit, especially for her basing. She's a really good base. She sets up well for offense. She saved Bayley a few times there, as did Sarah Logan at one point. But you know, she So I think she was excellent in this match. Bayley has had a tough few weeks. If you remember the Sasha match, Chris, from 3 or 4 weeks ago, that match was not very good. And until they started doing the the big brawling spot towards the end when the crowd got into it, the match was very sloppy. Yeah. They really messed up on some spots. They seemed to be working too fast. And, you know, Sasha can definitely have her down moments, but I think that might have been mostly Bayley. And it was definitely Bayley here, whether she was knocked loopy on the turnbuckle flub or what, I don't know. But she seemed really off. And I was actually talking with my brother Dustin during the show. And Dustin brought this up. You know, Bayley might just be someone who's streaky. You know, she can be on a streak of being really good and then be on a streak where she's quite honestly bad. You know, she's not someone who's a consistently good performer. So I guess she's downgraded back to being called Pam again for the time being. But but yeah, she had a rough night tonight for sure. As far as Ruby goes, I think she's definitely getting some sort of significant push, and it's obvious at this point because, like you said, she had the two big wins against Sasha and Bayley in 1 week, like you said, both good matches and both matches where she was very good in them. And I think, you know, WWE obviously, you know, has been paying attention and has noticed that. So she's got herself a pretty good spot on the Raw Women's Division. And I either think she's going to be Nia's next challenger. And they had a very good sequence at the Rumble this year where Nia gave Ruby a huge body press to the floor and Ruby took a great bump on her elimination. So I'd be interested to see that matchup for sure. And I do think there's a good chance, like you said, that she could be the, I don't know, strongest option to win the Money in the Bank in June. So, I mean, she's definitely being pushed up the card as a major contender for the title.
Well, they got 6 weeks, so there's a long time.
Right.
Yeah, there's a long time between shows. So, I mean, who knows where we'll go from here. I mean, it's either she's winning Money in the Bank or she's going to face Nia. I think that's the way you have to go right now. Nia and Alexa, I mean, we'll talk about it in the, you know, a few minutes when we talk about the match, but I just think it's time to move on. For the next big show, I mean, they'll probably still do some TV stuff, and because like I said, they got 6 weeks, so they'll probably do a couple weeks, maybe more on television, and blow it off on TV. But yeah, something needs to be done. And Bayley, I mean, yeah, the Sasha match. And there's been other matches too where she's kind of looked off in ways, but
some of those tags too.
So yeah. I wonder if she's maybe. I mean, this one I'm going to blame on the turnbuckle spot because that did look rough. But I'm kind of wondering if she's got maybe some confidence issues going on.
Yeah, yeah, that
because
that could very
she
well
is
be the
not
case.
A you know a push commodity like she used to be. You know, she really isn't, and. It's nope. Like they don't know when they're going to pull the trigger on the Bayley Sasha thing. It's just it's lingering and lingering and lingering. It's like, when are you going to do something? Piss or get off the pot.
It's getting annoying.
Piss
now.
Or get off the pot. This is one of those things that's going on. Some things they just don't know what they're doing, and week by week, and it's time to do something, man. And maybe it's for the best for Bayley to. I wouldn't say turn like complete heel, but give her this edge, you know, in the Sasha feud, whenever they do it. And, you know, because everybody's thinking that Sasha is going to be the aggressive, you know, heelish person. Let it be Bayley. Give her an edge.
Yeah. Well,
you know, why not? Yeah.
Why not?
I mean, you still keep her as a babyface character, but just have her have an edge. You know, I don't know. They need to do something, but, Ruby Riott's a great performer, and I'm glad to see that she's been getting her well-deserved rub here. I really like that. She puts it in, man. She works hard. She busts her ass. She deserves it. So, good for her. All right. The first match of the show, the opening match, and the best match on the show, Intercontinental Heavyweight title, Seth Rollins versus The Miz. Seth Rollins is easily the number one babyface in the company right now. I don't think there's any arguments. I think he's. He's the number one babyface on Raw. Let's put it that way. Daniel Bryan's probably the number one babyface still. Period. But Seth is definitely the number one babyface on Raw. There's no doubt there. And Miz, of course, this is his last technical Raw match. And these two have had really strong matches together. And this was their swan song, and it was a perfect swan song. They had a great match. And I just don't understand how anybody could still shit on The Miz. You know, even after, you know, all the great matches he's had in the past years, the people that still shit on The Miz, I mean, they got to be doing it just to be doing it for trolling or whatever, because the guy's one of the best wrestlers around. And it's...
Dave
and Rollins is on a roll right now. He's had a tremendous, you know, pretty much calendar year plus run going. I mean, he's amazing. The crowd is into him. He's a top traditional babyface. He sells, he bumps, he's got it all. And it's like I've said on Twitter recently, and I know your brother Dylan, who's not with us tonight, also echoed my thoughts tonight as we record the show. Is this whole thing right here makes it look even more stupid that they turn him heel. Seth Rollins should have never been a heel. He's at his best as a babyface.
Never.
It's just the way it is. He works better as a babyface. His character's better as a babyface. Everything about him is better as a babyface. So, again, these two had a great match. Lots of near falls. Lots of reversals. Which I tweeted out. Our buddy Brad Stutz tweeted out that he thought that may have been a little too much. I said, well, this show... It's probably for the best, because it's probably the only match to have that type of stuff. And it was. So why it worked perfectly. Yeah. Seth retained the title. We'll see where he goes from here. But, man, what a great match. Your thoughts?
Yeah, this match was tremendous. I mean, just outstanding. Seth Rollins, several years back, I've had discussions with and other fans about how, you know, could really be the potential next Jeff Hardy like babyface, and that's sort of coming to be true now that he's finally being pushed as a major babyface. He always, you know, he kind of has a similar aesthetic, I guess, in some ways, not quite as wacky as Jeff, but you know. Definitely a similar aesthetic, and he's role, and he was a terrible heel, especially a top heel. He never should have turned. It was a terrible, terrible mistake. And if they ever wanted to break up the Shield, one guy should have turned, probably Roman. But that's a completely entire different story to discuss. This match was outstanding. We had two skull-crushing finale near falls. The second one was awesome. Rollins, who I've criticized many times for not selling limb work, sold his limb very well tonight. Has improved in that department a lot. Great drama, great crowd, great action. Just a pretty awesome opener overall. This match was fantastic. I mean, Seth Rollins is so over, it's kind of absurd. When he did his stomp thing, they all chanted "burn down," like a sweet chin music set up for a stomp. He did the fans were chanting "burn it down" to his stomps at one point. I mean, the guy's instantly over. And it's nice and refreshing to see that they finally figured out that he should be a babyface, and so I'm happy to see that. And he's really one of the highlights of Raw now. I'm still never going to be a huge Rollins fan, because stylistically he's not my favorite. But I certainly enjoy him and am entertained by him, and I think that this is, you know, going to be something to look forward to on Raw for the next year, at least something to look forward to. He's in a great place right now. And of course, like you said, The Miz has been great for a decade. He's been having great matches since he was a team with Morrison in 2008 ECW. Or really even late 2000 ECW. Or 2007, rather. So he I mean, he's awesome. No pun intended. You know, he's so, I mean, it's he's fantastic as always. Yeah, this smoked everything else on the show. It was an awesome match. And saved this from being quite possibly the most dull and boring show I've seen in a couple of years. So, thanks to that match.
The thing is with Rollins is that with Brock not being around, I mean, the IC title is the title of Raw. And yes, it is. His matches are, you know, they have that aura of being a main event type match. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, having this type of match as an opener was great. But imagine if this match would have been later in the show and got the fans back who were wanting to get hot, got the fans back into it. You know, I mean, they need to figure something out. I mean, if they're going to be Lesnar, Rollins may be the guy to do it. Why not?
Yeah.
Right now. I mean, go with a hot hand. You know, have him do it.
Exactly.
So, who knows? But anyway, we'll see where they go from here. Has he still IC champion? And Miz on SmackDown, you know, the whole build of him going to SmackDown was him getting punched by Daniel Bryan. It never happened. They haven't had any interactions since he's been back on the show. When you build something up like that so big and then don't fall through on it, I mean, I know they're going to do it eventually, but still, I mean, you built this whole shakeup of regarding him getting punched in the face, and it has not happened.
Right.
So
Nope.
It's just a weird deal there, and we'll talk about Brian in a few minutes. We'll get to his match, but Miz on SmackDown right now, I mean, where do we go? Jeff Hardy? I mean, is he going to be in the U.S. title hunt? I mean, what's because obviously Brian's not done with his feud, so.
I don't know.
I guess there'll be Money in the Bank, happen. Which.
Yeah.
I'm kind of believing now, looking at the way this show was done, that the men's Money in the Bank, and probably the women too, is going to be a split brand. They're going to have people from both brands in it.
I think so, which I actually support that because I don't think you need four money.
No. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. But it kind of, with them doing this, it's kind of going to, you know, it's going to hurt the whole brand separation deal. And there was a skit tonight that we'll talk about that did the same thing. Absolutely. So we'll talk more about that when we get to it.
It's also worth pointing out, just I'll jump ahead and go ahead and say this. Money in the Bank is being treated as a big five now, the fifth of a big five in the WWE calendar year. It will be a 4-hour show just for people who don't realize that. Because I believe Brock has a rumored title defense, not against anyone. You know, the opponent hasn't been rumored or anything, but apparently Brock will have a title defense, and I wouldn't be shocked to see Ronda in a match either.
Well,
on
she's
show,
working in Europe. That's we'll get her sea legs up under and see how she does. So. And no Ronda tonight as well. Interesting.
No.
All right. Next match. Raw women's title as Raw opens up with two matches here. Nia Jax defending against Alexa Bliss. The build for this has been great. Alexa's PSAs about bullying has been tremendous. And, I mean, they had a pretty good match at WrestleMania. This match didn't click. Crowd wasn't into it. Nia audibly calling spots was interesting.
Come on, dude. Yeah. Put in headlock.
I mean, I know. It's crazy. That crowd, I don't know if they really wanted to get behind Nia Jackson. You could definitely tell afterward during her promo where she went on this anti-bullying rant and just people, this New Jersey crowd was not into it at all. And yeah, the way that they're setting Nia up, man, it's, I think the crowd's really going to turn on her if they keep going in this direction. which I don't know, maybe the plan. I don't know, but still, it's going to be one of those deals where they're going to see that it's so contrived that they're not going to want to support it as much. So we'll see how that goes. But right. Alexa, you know, this is her first match back after getting her new implants. So, and she took some hard bumps in this match. So, you know, I guess she felt confident in herself. So, like I said, it was okay. But, man, this is the first match where we had the long rest hold sections. And this will be a running theme tonight. So, we'll see what happens. So, with your thoughts on the match and where do we go from here with Nia and Alexa?
The match was okay. The first match was bad, or the first half was bad, I think. But then it picked up a little bit when Nia took the big bump over the ropes to the floor, then the DDT on the stairs. But it was okay. I'm still not the biggest Alexa Bliss fan in the ring, although she did take some good bumps tonight, especially the sort of catapult bump over Nia's head across the ring. That was really well done. It was okay. The Nia promo was awful. Totally contrived bullshit that the fans didn't buy at all. She might be in trouble, fortunately, which is kind of sad because she was getting really over there for a few weeks, and now they've got her really putting on the anti-bullying. This company just doesn't understand how to just let things flow organically.
Tone deaf. That's the word. The word of the night. I know. If something starts to kind of like pick up or whatever, they up on it, beat you over the head with it so hard it's gonna kill it. They've done that for years, and this is gonna be another example of it. They're gonna make it where weird. People are booing somebody that's against bullying.
That's just hilarious. It's almost brilliant in a way, and should be commended for the. It's almost impressive that they can do that. I mean, as far as Nia goes, you know, I think there's a chance she has a program with Ruby. The person that I think is sort of kind of left in the cold is Ember. But you know, they could give her some squash matches and build her up for Money in the Bank. I don't think that's an issue, even for 6 weeks. Like, just let her hit the Eclipse to a few people and fucking have her do crazy spots in the ladder match.
I definitely see Nia and Ember in Riot Squad tag matches coming.
Sure, I think you're right there. I actually think what they're gonna do is I think they're gonna do Nia and you know Ruby. I think it's going to be Nia Ruby at the pay-per-view with the otherwise squad ladies in the ladder match. And now this is, you know, just kind of, you know, large speculation, but there's hints of it. I think they might do another tag with Ronda, but with the actual full-time performers where she tags with Natty against Mickey and Alexa.
That very easily could happen. I mean, it makes sense.
I think they're going to... You know, I think they're going to build to that. You know, Alexa can do the promos, and Mickey, who has actually been quite good in the ring this year, like really good in the ring this year, actually, is, you know, a perfect opponent for Ronda right now. So I think that's definitely something that could possibly be.
Yeah, it's part of the ultimate plan of, you know, Natty turning on Ronda.
And then I think they're just going to throw you know, probably Sasha, Bailey, and Ember, Sasha, Bailey. Well, I mean, shit, they'll probably have 8 people in these ladder matches, so they'll probably throw Sasha, Bailey, Ember, and then.
You got SmackDown. You're going to have Becky and Sonya and Mandy, you know, off of SmackDown. Yep. And Peyton and Billy are going to be involved somehow, some way, so.
They've done 10. They've done 10 people ladder matches before for these Money in the Banks. So I wouldn't shock if they did 10. I don't think they will. I think they'll do 8, but 10 wouldn't completely shock me. I think they did 10 at Mania 1 year, maybe Mania 26. I think.
Yeah, it could happen. It could happen, but yeah, I mean, yeah. that's got to be the way to go. I mean, they got to do something to try to, you know, freshen it up a little bit. And Ronda and Alexa would be very interesting. Very interesting. To see how Ronda could play off Alexa. I definitely would like to see that. All right, our next match, and this is the beginning of the SmackDown block of the show, which, oh my God. We begin with the U.S. Heavyweight title match. First time since 2008 these two have wrestled each other. Jeff Hardy defending against Randy Orton. Randy hit the RKO on Hardy on SmackDown Tuesday to cement his deal where he can do it on anybody at any time and whenever he felt like it. And then we had this match, and this is Randy Orton at his worst. And whoever agented this match, I don't know what to say about you, but wow. very slow and plodding and boring. And Jeff was doing Jeff things. It just, these two are not stylistically compatible with each other. But I will say this. Orton, for what he did, was good in the match. It just was not what needed to be done in the match. That's just the way it is. But he did a clean job. Got to give him that. Clean job to the Swanton after the Twist of Fate. Hardy gets a good definitive win over Orton. And he'll move on to whatever. But it was definitely interesting to see Randy go down like that with, you know, basically no type of fight, no RKO or anything. Very weird. Your thoughts on this whole situation?
I think this match was missing Mike Adam. We called Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy. when Mike Adam debuted as an interviewer, and we all burst out laughing in my parents' living room. I remember watching it live very, very clearly. But this match was pretty average, pretty boring. I think the highlights were Jeff throwing his body entirely at Randy multiple times with the full force and weight of his body at him, which was frightening to see at times and probably hurt like hell. Jeff, like, landing on Randy's head on the Whisper in the Wind and throwing his entire body on a flying forearm and to mount his comeback, like launching his entire body at him, at his head on the floor. I mean, Jeff does that a lot, but this was like completely absurd amounts tonight. It couldn't have felt good to be Randy Orton in that match. This was pretty lousy and it at times, not terribly interesting. I think the finish had more to do with the fact that they were like, all right, it's time to go home. We lost the crowd. Let's get this shit over with. And they just rushed through that thing and ended it. I'm sure Jeff was meant to go over pretty much as cleanly as he did, but it was basically like watching a match that was really slow. And then like you hit fast forward, you know, 10 seconds and then the finish, you know what I mean? Like that's literally what it was like. It was like hitting the fast forward button, to the finish. So it was a bizarre match. It was what it was. There were some people who were kind of excited for it. I never really thought it would be much of anything. So it was kind of what I was expecting, to be honest.
It came off too cold. They did the RKO thing, but it's just a cold match. And Orton, God damn, he needs to be freshened up. But there's nothing you can do, really. And you can't turn him heel because fans are not going to accept it. He's one of these guys that he's going to be cheered no matter what he does. You can't turn him heel, even though he loves being heel. But you just can't do it because it just won't work. It just won't work in the climate now because fans don't want to accept it. So I don't know what you do with him, but I guess, you know, Hardy and I don't know if they'll do Hardy and Shelton or Hardy and Miz or something's going to happen here, but yeah, I don't have any faith in the SmackDown creative. That's for damn sure. And more on that as we go along. All right, next we get the sports entertainment section of the show, and probably the second best thing on the entire show, period. Elias comes out to do Elias things, and he was milking the crowd, and it was great. And especially with his Bruce Springsteen smack. So then New Day comes out. So this is our first of our brand and brands meeting each other in a segment here. New Day came out with their musical instruments. They wanted to perform with Elias, blah, blah, blah. Then Aiden English came out, and the fans went nuts. And he sang and did Rusev Day. And Rusev came out, which it was teased on SmackDown Tuesday that Lana gave Rusev the eye to get rid of Aiden, but that wasn't followed up on here. They're still together in their spot here. And Rusev was great here, as usual. Then we had No Way Jose and the conga line featuring Titus Worldwide, which was great. And the Fashion Police. And I think Bo Dallas may have been involved in there somewhere. I'm seeing people say he was there. I didn't notice him. But the Fashion Police was out there. And then Elias was like, who else could come out, blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, Uncle Bob Rude showed up wearing a nice purple robe. I don't even remember him wearing that robe before. But he dropped him with a DDT. The fans went nuts for Glorious. And then Bobby danced with the conga line and even twerked on Rusev. And it was funny that Aiden wanted to join the conga line and Rusev got mad at him on the side. This is a really, really fun segment. And it was a needed segment on this show, no doubt. But I think it was you that said this is a creative way of getting everybody a payday on the show.
Yeah. I mean, it made me laugh. I was like, this is a way to get everybody a payday on the
show. Why not?
I mean, it was definitely a fun segment. I'm always kind of someone who looks at these and goes, well, I mean, why don't you just put a match?
Oh, God, tonight? Oh!
You know, in hindsight, but in hindsight, they probably would have had somebody working a fucking headlock for 20 minutes. So, I mean, it would have been a Rene Goulet versus Salomo match, opening card from 85. Oh. I don't think they. I'm glad they put this here, you know. So, in hindsight now, but yeah, it was a fun segment, if random, but it was definitely fun and hilariously was, like you said, probably the second best thing on this entire show. I mean, that and Ruby Riott's performance.
No, that yeah, you know, yeah,
and I mean that was it. I mean, it was the Seth Miz, Ruby Riott, and the fucking Titus dancing in a conga line were the highlights of the show.
And Dana making sure that letting Titus know that where he needed to walk as well, so he wouldn't fall down again. Great.
Yes, I saw that. Someone posted a clip of that. That was
great. Great stuff. Yeah, this was a funny segment, and again, needed levity in this show. Oh, man. All right, next up, Daniel Bryan against Big Cass. It's interesting that the guy that benefited the most from the Superstar Shakeup is Big Cass.
Yes, he has.
He was on Raw, before he got hurt. He comes back after his injury. They put him in this main event type feud with Daniel Bryan. The build has been interesting, to say the least. Cass has cut some really strong promos, but Bryan wasn't on SmackDown Tuesday because of the, quote, bruising on his chest, unquote. They had him work in the dark match.
Did he? Yes.
Against Nakamura.
They had him work the dark
match. But suppose it was a television thing. Well, why not just have him wear a shirt? It's just that simple. And then they did the wee Daniel Bryan, which never works anymore. It's just not good. The fans want to see Bryan against Miz. This is holding that up. They're in New Jersey, and the crowd was chanting "We want Enzo" at one point during this match. Which, oh my goodness gracious! But Bryan likes these types of matches. I remember somebody brought up that he talked about he liked working against guys like the Big Show and working against Kane because it was different types of matches for him, and it, you know, made him become a different kind of worker and working against a different type of guy like that. And that's cool that to hear somebody say that like that, that they're not just wanting to work the guys that's in their wheelhouse. They're willing to work guys that's not their style, you know, and try to have a different type of match and see if they can have a good match a different way. Well, this wasn't one of them. Cass, the thing with Big Cass is Cass has a main event look. He carries himself as a main eventer. He's just not ready yet as a worker. And this showed it. It was a short match. Bryan went over clean with the yes lock. I was kind of surprised at that, actually. But Cass beat the shit out of him after the match and laid him out with the kick. Vance Chandler, you tapped out. So he got his heat back. This feud is not over. But, yeah, I mean, what's your thoughts on this finish here? I think me and you both kind of went in it skeptically on Twitter. We're curious to see how it would end up. And Bryan went over clean, but again, we're not over yet.
The match I thought was good. Certainly not great, but it was good. I thought they actually did a good job of doing the cutoffs and stuff. And it was I actually thought it was laid out well enough, more so than a lot of the other matches. You know, Cass is not very good. That's pretty clear, but he wasn't as bad as he was in the Big Show matches, at least, where he looked like legitimately one of the worst wrestlers I've ever seen.
Yeah.
He was, you know, passable, but not good, tonight. You know, Bryan was strong. The cross faces, were nasty to set up the, to finally put in the yes lock. That was a good little struggle at the finish there. You know, the match was good. The post-match got the appropriate heat that they wanted to get out of it, so it worked. I'm not really interested in seeing this feud continue, just because, you know, I'd rather just see this match once and not a million times, because I'm not sure you can get anything much better out of the one that they had tonight, which was about 2¾ stars, 3 stars. Just because, like you said, I don't see Cass being ready to perform at a high level in the ring. It was what it was. It was honestly just a little bit shorter than I thought it would be, although I think it was good that it was short. And I sort of expected Cass to win, but he didn't. And I kind of think the route that they took actually helps Cass.
Yeah.
Because if he had won clean, I don't know how much that would have helped him. But, you know, he loses clean and then beats up Bryan for the match. I actually think it's kind of made him look – I think it helps Cass in the long run. But otherwise, I mean, it was just kind of a – I don't know. It was just – I was fascinated about this match because from what I've seen over the last few years, other than being a solid hot tag, Big Cass is a terrible wrestler in the ring. And I just wanted to see how the dynamic would be with Bryan, and it ended up being, you know, pretty decent for the most part. So in some ways, you know, this exceeded my expectations. I just and I wasn't sure how they were going to book it, and they ended up doing something a little bit different than I thought they would. And overall, I think it was actually okay.
Yeah, you're higher in this than I was. The thing is if they keep this going, Cass has to win. You can't just drop him out. He's gonna have to win some of Bryan. And
he's gonna have to.
And
you're right.
I don't know how that's gonna go over. Because I mean, really, Bryan shouldn't be losing to Big Cass. I mean, he just really shouldn't. Bryan shouldn't be losing at all until he wins a championship or something. I mean, it's a mistake, I think, to have him lose before he wins a championship. I really do. no matter who, even against The Miz, I just think it's a mistake. And I think if he loses the big cast, it may take a little luster off of Bryan in some people's eyes. It's just not the time. Yeah, you know, down the road, if they did this, then okay. But it's just not the time. But you can't tell the creative that. So, I mean, we'll see. I could be proved wrong. They could have Bryan beat him every match.
Sure.
I think that would hurt Cass in the long run, but we'll see. I don't know. But, again, we got 6 more weeks to Money in the Bank, so it's time will tell. As we continue with the SmackDown portion of the show here, the SmackDown Women's title is on the line next as Carmella defends against Charlotte Flair. This was terrible. Carmella,
it's bad.
Carmella, I'll give Carmella this. She is really good at playing her character. She's entertaining in the ring with her trash talk. Everything she does is good. That's not involving actual wrestling. But she is not what's needed in this picture as the women's champion. She is better off reserved as a second manager or, you know, whatever. But, I mean, and wrestler too, but not in a main event scene. It's just that way it is. You know, it's just the way it is. And then you have Charlotte, who is maybe the most miscast babyface in WWE in many years. She has lost so much, and since she's been a babyface, she can't work as a babyface. It's just when you have a situation like that where you have somebody that can't work as a babyface and somebody just can't work, then you got problems. And, of course, they did damn shitty-ass rest holds in this match. It was way too long. Charlotte missed the moonsault, landing on her knee, so that her knee was buckling. Carmella kicked her and rolled her up. 1, 2, 3. Sadly, Carmella retained the title. But, oh, my God. I mean, this is another one. I think that's got to continue. And because Charlotte, God forbid, you know, that somebody has the total advantage over Charlotte. So Charlotte's got to get her win back. And I actually was surprised Charlotte lost on pay-per-view because that didn't happen. That's an extreme rarity for her losing on pay-per-view.
Yes.
And boy, does this make that decision at WrestleMania look like complete dog shit, doesn't it? I mean, Charlotte loses to Asuka and then loses clean to Carmella here. Asuka then goes to SmackDown with that great creative, and they put her in a tag match and have her lose her first match on SmackDown. And then she's basically now become just somebody, just another face in the crowd, really.
Becky pal
and Charlotte's pal. They're a Japanese friend, basically. That's what she's become, their Japanese friend. And it's amazing. Just totally amazing how something that Triple H was so protective of for all those, you know, years in NXT and even in WWE of her undefeated streak. And in 1 month, she's become, you know, basically
cutting jokes.
Yeah. She's become Alicia Fox.
She's been relegated to Becky Lynch status.
Yeah.
Jokes backstage. And
yeah. She's doing shtick with Becky. And I mean, it's just, my God. The creative on this is just horrible. And I would have thought, and if Carmella would have won, I would have definitely thought that Peyton and Billy, who were on the pre-show, you know, would have got involved and made it a cheap victory. No, she just rolls her up, you know, like that. Like, what the fuck? I don't understand this shit. I don't know. I mean, it's just stupid. Just stupidity, as my old man would say. So what? What do you think of this bullshit?
I mean, the match was terrible. It was an awful match. There was a long section of Carmella putting in a headlock and Charlotte looking like she had to take a dump or something for, you know, 4 or 5 minutes. Charlotte looked like she was, you know, had a stomach ache. That was a terrible facial
expression. She's just not a baby face. She's terrible.
No. No, she's bad at it. You know, Carmella is, like you said, good character, but boy, is she bad in the ring. It's just, man, that's just terrible match, awful match. I kind of want to forget it ever happened. Dustin pointed this out, but it was pretty funny when they showed the replay at the finish where Charlotte's knee buckled out from under her. They showed the slow motion replay and everything, and the impact and everything, and I appreciate that they do that now, because one of my pet peeves is when they would, like, do the slow motion and then speed full, like, to back, like, 100% at impact. Well, in this case, it was a bad idea, because it's slow motion where Charlotte safely lands on the moonsault and then just acts like her knee buckled and falls over on the slow motion. So that was a production error.
Shocking. Production error takes place on these shows. Kevin Dunn.
But yeah, it was a bad match, and I mean, Charlotte Flair is just a babyface. They've desperately got to turn her heel. Find a way to turn her heel.
Please. Have her turn on Becky. Becky's used to that.
Oh yes, Becky's like Sting. Just have her turn on her. God, I mean, it's perfect. Like, I mean, it's just it was a nightmare. It was so bad. I mean. I like the idea of Carmella as champion, and I've actually liked her promos.
She's entertaining
and stuff, and I mean the Iconics. I'm already sick of them. I kind of
well, they what they've done is they've taken the worst part of their act and turned it up to 11.
Yeah, it's cringe. I mean, like, I actually want to actively turn off.
I love Peyton and Billy to death, like, but. They've taken the worst part of their act and turned it up to 11. The whole impression thing, and yeah.
It's embarrassing. I mean, Booker was the highlight of that. Booker was, you know, embarrassed for the wrestling business at that moment. But
oh, if only he was on commentary for this show. Oh.
I know, God. I might have given it a thumbs in the middle if he was on it.
I did love Michael Cole being taking Booker. So I wish you were here, you know, instead of him.
God, Coach is the worst commentator in the world. He's awful.
Yeah, and Cole and Corey just teeing off on him too. It's funny.
That the match stunk. I mean, look, that match was so bad. We're talking about Donald Coach.
And he's not even involved in this match. Which I want to talk about commentary when we get back when the Raw portion gets back up, because it was something interesting I noticed in that when the Raw crew came back on. But yeah, this is going to be ridiculous. And we have a breaking news update on Twitter. WWE has just tweeted out as we record: Alexa Bliss suffered a shoulder injury in her match with Nia, waiting on further medical evaluation. Don't know if this is storyline or what. She did kind of look upset after the match, like she had been crying. So then maybe there could be something to that. So we'll see.
Dislocation, maybe. I don't know. Oh, she's all right.
What's up for her? All right. Next, we have the SmackDown heavyweight title, WWE World Heavyweight title match. AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura, no disqualification. Now, going into this, they have done a pretty good job of getting Nakamura over as a heel with all of his dick activity. Low-blowing AJ Styles numerous times, although Kevin Dunn missed it on Tuesday SmackDown. Shocking. But, yeah, they've done a good job of building that up. Paige made a no-DQ match, so that would be legal. So, of course, you knew what was going to happen. Then we get to the match. Now, I've seen a lot of people on Twitter when this match was getting started and they were pimping it up. I can't believe this isn't the main event of the show. Well, I guess once you saw this match, you understood why it wasn't the main event of the show. Because if this would have went on last, there may have actually been a riot in the at the Rock in Newark. Because, wow. I mean, we'll talk about the finish in a minute, but this match, oh my God, it was so tedious for the first, what seemed like half an hour of the match, was so tedious, and you would have thought that these two, I mean, that it would have been a little bit different. Now that Nakamura is a full-blown heel, you thought it would have been a little bit different. And they already had a match at the Greatest Royal Rumble, which was okay. It had a non-finish. Then we had the match at Mania where AJ won clean, and that was not a good match. So then we have this one, and it's like the worst of Nakamura, and AJ Styles is so awesome. It's like, why isn't this better? This should be a lot better. And it did kind of pick up. The last few minutes of the match was picking up. AJ getting hit in the head with a chair that bounced off Nakamura's knee, hit him in the face and causing the bleed hard way. That was kind of nasty. But they didn't play around it, of course. But they did multiple dick offense, including the finish, which involved – they did a false count finish where both guys got back up after hitting each other in the balls. And then they just punted each other in the balls. I knew it. As soon as it happened, I said, okay, here we go, double count, double KO finish. And sure enough, that's what happened. Fans just shit on it, booed heavily, just a terrible finish. And this feud must continue as well. So, oh my God. Where do we go from here? Do both men have to wear like body armor or some shit like that? Or the old Bret Hart thing from, Nitro in Toronto with Goldberg? Is that where we're going next? They're going to be wearing chastity belts. where do we go from here with this, Devin? Where do we go?
This match was worked the most boring match at first. I literally almost fell asleep watching it. And I've been drinking sodas all damn weekend. So, I'm sitting here drinking, four sodas a day, and I'm falling asleep watching this match. Finally, I wake up after the disgusting chair shot and spot, which was kind of scary because AJ could have definitely got a concussion easily if it had hit him in a different angle. But that was a great spot. I think the match picked up a good deal after that, and I was starting to really enjoy it. And the first low blow spot I loved because it was a payback spot, and the count out tease was amusing. Then they did it again, and it was actually brutal. But it was such a terrible finish. God, it was bad. It was an awful finish. It was like a comedy spot in an indie match or something. It was just...
It's just so fucking cheap. And I understand why they did it. It's just this complete bullshit why they did it. I mean, there is logic there, but it's bullshit.
It's just terrible. It was awful. I mean, it was a terrible finish. Oh, man. I mean... Heel Nakamura, the character's fun, but man alive, is he boring as piss as a wrestler. I mean, this guy, he's not any good. I mean, it's crazy. I don't know. I mean, and AJ, I mean, he's great. I mean, AJ, he still could be, I know AJ Styles is still great. He's had a couple of matches where I've seen him be incredible in the last several months. I mean, hell, last year, from September, after the initial Kevin Owens feud, from September to November, December, he was outstanding.
Yep.
Then they put him up with Kevin Owens again, and then now he's back with he had the great match with Cena on SmackDown on TV this year. He was great in that handicap match at the Rumble. I mean, he made that match, and that match was good. But not great. I mean, I thought he was good in the multi-man match this year for the title at Fastlane or whatever. He's just, man, Owens and Nakamura are just two guys you don't ever want to be paired with because, man, they just suck everything out of you. I mean, it's just, this is just.
Well, definitely with the current agenting. The agenting definitely as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know what they're doing. I mean, they had Nakamura putting in fucking holds in a damn no DQ match. Who the hell's putting these matches together?
Well, WWE's bad about that. I mean, look at all those times that we've had like these real big blood feuds and stuff like that, and the match starts with a lockup. I know. I mean, it just happens.
It's all, like,
And it's like, why? Why are you doing this? And you got this crowd already that's kind of on the edge, and you do this shit, and it's like, oh my God. I mean, why? And if crowd was, I mean, this is a match that you could tell the crowd was looking forward to. Because both guys are over. And it just hurts AJ. It really hurts AJ to have this type of stuff. Nakamura's going to coast anyway because Nakamura's, you know, Nakamura. He's got the gimmick. You know, he can coast. It don't matter with him. But Jesus, AJ's the champion and having these shitty ass matches. Oh. And it's going to continue. It's not over. So.
God help us
all. There's your SmackDown part of the show, folks. Gives you great hope for Tuesday, so I tell you that. Oh, God. Well, Raw returns. Michael, I tell you this. The show's energy had gotten so down because you got this shitty SmackDown matches and shitty SmackDown commentary. Tom and Byron just don't inspire anything. And Michael Cole comes back, and it's like a breath of fresh air. Because you got Michael Cole and Corey sounds reinvigorated, and they're shitting on Coach again. I mean, it's like the fun's back. You know, maybe this show can rebound and turn the corner. And while not as bad as some of the SmackDown stuff, it just didn't happen. The next match, no. Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. This was another interesting layout of a match. And one thing I've noticed with the Braun-Lashley matches is that Lashley always starts and stays in there until he makes the hot tag to Braun. There's no Braun beginning run of a match and Braun tagging out.
No.
Every Braun-Lashley match has had this same psychology. Lashley starts, hot tag, Braun clings house, boom. And here we had it again. Now, I want to say this about Owens and Zayn. Ever since they've moved to Raw, they've been a whole lot better because they're not in any of the main angles.
They're jobbers, too. It's hilarious.
They're basically, you know, comedy act right now, more than anything else. And it's fine to have them against Braun and Lash because Braun's been beating the shit out of them every damn week. And again, here tonight. Braun's running pounces on Owens and Zayn every show is amazing. To watch them take those bumps. And he just nails them every time. It's so funny. And they did the deal here where Owens and Zayn had their little friction. And they were putting each other back in the ring. And Braun was killing both of them. Owens eventually took the pin. Then they got Sammy beat the shit out of him. He took the abuse as well. Braun and Lashley are standing in the ring, standing tall, posing. This should have been how the show ended. This should have ended like this. Let the fans cheer Braun as he is doing his thing. Because this seemed like a total like house show ending of a you know, the whole deal. This is where you leave. Send the fans home happy with this. But I guess we're going to have Zayn and Owens kind of splitting up. I mean, what do you think? Where are we going?
Oh, God. I mean, the match itself was fine. I mean, I didn't think it was really all that good at all. I thought the first tag match that they had was very good. I thought
better crowd. Was
kind of bad in some ways, especially, the crowd was bad. And this, the whole Owens and Zayn, like getting an argument for 5 minutes towards the end was really awkward. And,
it went on too long.
It went on way too long. It was just weird. And then the non-legal guy was in.
Which they definitely mentioned that.
Yeah, they did. It was fine. I mean, Braun's hot tag was fun as always. I'm glad Lashley didn't spike KO on his head on the brain buster. That was good. Unlike what he did, the big cast.
He won with a delayed vertical suplex. How amazing was that?
I know.
That's like something that you, that's something that you would see on in early 80s TV squash matches. That's it was tremendous.
Yeah.
Harley Race must have been loving it from where he was watching it, because that's one of his moves from back in the day to win matches.
Oh, yeah.
God, I mean that was tremendous. I was wondering, when, are we gonna have the or is the next match going to end with a drop kick, a body slam?
Harley was watching with the other Singh brother, who's getting his rehab on his knee. Who's watching with the other Singh brothers? Didn't he train them?
Yes. Yeah, he was a mentor. Yeah,
I think
yeah.
I thought he did. Yeah, that's what I thought. But that tells you how interested I am in the show by bringing up Harley Race and people he mentored. But the match was fine. You know, the crowd was pretty much killed by this point. So I mean, nothing really worked for the crowd. Except for the opening minutes of the next match, but otherwise this would have been killed by this point.
Yeah, it was just I don't know, but Braun and Lashley are interesting as a team. I call them the world's greatest fire and ice, Scott Norton and Ice Train.
Speaking of Scott Norton, I saw that the reuniting of Vicious and Delicious.
Oh, that's outstanding. Braun and Lashley, that's interesting to see how much they've been teaming with each other.
I wonder if they'll get a tag title thing here going on. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, there were no tag teams tonight, I'll tell you that.
If you
watched this show, you would have thought there was a tag team division in on this roster. But, I mean, they
true.
Definitely could, but... I mean, Matt and Bray are baby faces. I don't know. I mean, our buddy Frey mentioned, it just seems like they don't know what to do with Braun and Lashley right now, so they're just teaming them up. And that could be very well the option.
That's probably it.
And Raw right now is definitely very heavy in the baby face department. So somebody's going to need a turn. And I know...
Yeah, kind of like how SmackDown's very heavy in the
yeah.
department.
Well, the most obvious option for that is in our next match. Roman Reigns versus Samoa Joe. All right. You know, we railed on WrestleMania, the Roman Brock thing. We didn't do a reaction show after the greatest Royal Rumble ever. And thank God we didn't. But let's be honest. It's time. The experiment needs to end. They got to do something with Roman in the worst way. They got to take him off television. Either that, or they got to just turn him full-blown fucking heel. It's got to happen. The fans are not going to accept this guy. Just be honest. It's become, like I told your brother, Dylan, at the Wrestle Action Show, the night of the greatest Royal Rumble ever, because he hadn't seen the match yet until I told him about it. I told him, I said, when the fans of Saudi Arabia are booing you, yeah, it's time. It's time. Because it's become the accepted part of the show. It's part of the show now to shit on Roman Reigns. And when it's come to that far, fucking play off of him and just have him go full-blown fucking heel. It's time. Have him destroy Seth Rollins. You know, do that. Do something. Have him just destroy a babyface and just take out his frustrations. He should have lost this match tonight. I mean, he really should have. And they could have used that to their advantage. They could have made Joe, have Joe go over Roman, and Joe propel Joe into the SmackDown world title scene, which they already teased it already on SmackDown Tuesday night with AJ. Give him a big win over Roman. And since Roman's losing everybody else, shit, might as well lose to Joe. And just have Roman just fucking lose his mind. Somebody brought up on Twitter that Roman Reigns' gimmick right now basically is, he's the guy that shows up to work. Because that's what his character is. He's bitching about Brock Lesnar, not being at shows, but I'm here every night. Yeah. And here's another thing, too. The character constantly complains about, you know, Vince McMahon's boy. Well, here he is in the main event of another fucking pay-per-view. So it's just going against the perception of what you're trying to put out there. I mean, everybody knows the fucking deal. It's just stupidity. That's why the fans don't believe in it, because they know that they're trying to put on this false flag and they're seeing through the bullshit. And the fans, you know, they don't want to be treated like morons. So they're rebelling against Roman Reigns for that reason. They're not rebelling against Braun, and Braun's a Vince favorite, you know? It's just, it's become right. The part of the show, just like chanting CM Punk or throwing beach balls around or whatever. It's become part of the show, or the John Cena stuff. But at least with Cena had a devoted fan base of women and kids mm-hmm. that he could play off of. That's why John would never turn heel, because it would kill him. It would kill him when his Make-A-Wish stuff. It would kill everything that he was involved in. That's why it never happened, folks. It wasn't because, you know, they just didn't want to do it because of wrestling reasons. It happened because outside the ring. They could never have done it. They never could have done it. So, but John was able to play off of it. He made it work in his way. Roman just can't make it work. They tried. They've had attempts. I mean, when you look at the stuff after the Undertaker match at WrestleMania last year, when they gave him this edge, you know, it was working, and then they went right back to the old Roman Reigns. John Cena.
Or his title reign after Mania 32. Well,
that and the John Cena feud. He got that edge back.
Yep.
Then he went right back to being Roman Reigns again. It's tone deaf. They don't know. They have no idea. And of course, they laid this match out to have him become like the conquering hero again, when the fans don't want to see that fucking shit out of him. They're tired of him. Roman's a great worker, yep. Folks. He really is, but it's not his fault. He's just being told to do what to do. And Michael Hayes, who was the agent for this match, needs to be taken out back and whipped, like Kerry Von Erich whipped him in Country Whipping matches. Because, I mean, good. Well, why are you doing this type of match with all this fucking rest hole bullshit at this late in the show?
There were boring chants.
People leaving the building in mass. There was a beat the traffic chant as people were leaving the building. People didn't give a fuck about this. It started off hot because Joe was kicking the shit out of them. They wanted Joe. Yeah. They loved Joe. And then Joe, they killed that because they had Joe take his ass on the mat and lay in and praying. Nobody cared. Nobody wanted to see that. This match shouldn't have went over 7 minutes. This should have been two guys just beating the holy hell out of each other for 7 minutes.
And then Joe choking
Joe out. Choking him out. Or even if you have Roman win, at least have it, you know, be an explosive match. Not this fucking right. bullshit. I mean, it's just tone deaf, terrible. Terrible stuff, man. I don't know what you do. And they got to shake it up, man. They got to do something with Roman Reigns to make it different, because he is stale as a bag of potato chips that's been sitting on the shelf for a year and a half. It's over. It's over, folks. This incarnation of Roman Reigns has to die. It's time for a rebirth. Whether, like I said, whether it means take him off television or do a complete turn, make him just this complete asshole, or do whatever you have to do. The babyface version of Roman Reigns is dead. D-E-A-D, dead. I know your brother just loves Roman Reigns, and I would have loved to have seen him, you know, watching WrestleMania, the Greatest Royal Rumble ever, and this show to see how they've done it, because he's about as diehard Roman Reigns fan as I've seen. And it's just, they're doing him so fucking dirty. So dirty.
It's, yeah, the match was probably safely good. I mean, the whole WrestleMania were terrible. God, they were bad. And it was done on purpose as a way to make Roman look bad, make Joe look bad. It was just so bad. The opening minutes were great.
Yeah, it was really good.
To be fair. But I think the worst part about this is that Roman's already finished. At least put Joe over. Now Joe looks like a chump. He looks like an idiot. He's a fucking loser now, too. See, now you have to go back to fucking SmackDown with his tail tucked between his legs because he lost to a fucking loser.
Yep.
That's awful. That just makes SmackDown look bad.
Even worse than it already does. So, because you already had Miz to Rollins.
Terrible. That's just terrible.
You already had Miz lose to Rollins, so, and now this.
Awful. Yeah. You're right. You're absolutely right. I didn't even think of that. I mean, it's just, it's awful. It's terrible. And the build was Joe just talking smack and basic, just making, just, and now he looks like a fucking lying idiot.
Yeah.
I mean, it just made him look so bad at the end of this match. I mean, how can you even take Samoa Joe seriously anymore?
Yeah.
It's just some of the worst booking. God, a few months back, the Frey Movement had posted something about how I'm willing to bet here we're at the end of this great WWE run and it's going to be like the dark days of whatever, and I think he's right. I think we're in the dark days again, man. This is they're starting.
Here's
to,
the thing. There is a lot going on behind the scenes. I don't know if I say internal struggle, but there definitely is like a Cold War type thing going on between the Vince crew and the Triple H crew. And
right.
It's becoming more and more evident. And the thing is that you have NXT, which is, you know, Triple H's baby, and their big shows are just always tremendous. The booking's great. Their TV shows are good. I mean, they're not great, or, you know, but they're good and solid in their ways. But they always, you know, it's just got a totally different feel and look than what you have on the main television shows. And 205 Live's undergone this renaissance. Once Vince said, you know, wash his hands of it and let, you know, Triple H and Adam Pearce run the show on that, look how much better that show's gotten. You know?
Yep.
And Vince isn't, the whole Vince is out of touch deal. There's stuff to it, of course, but it's not the main thing. Vince can be played at times too. I mean, there's a lot of Kevin Dunn going on here as well. I mean, it's a lot that's going on behind the scenes, and you got guys who are paying the price, like a Roman Reigns, and they're caught up between the two camps, and it's killing him. It's killing him right now. I don't know how you resolve that, because I think this is going to be a situation where nothing's going to change until Triple H probably gets full complete power and does things his way, and then we'll see what happens after that, because, I mean, I think it will be more of an NXT-type show on the main shows. And they'll have a different look and just have like different stuff, but we won't know until it happens. But until then, it's just, we're going to be going through this kind of a purgatory where we're going to have great, you know, WWE has great wrestling a lot. They really do. I mean, watch everything, you know. I mean, they really do. It's just some of the stupidest goddamn creative that they have sometimes. And it hurts the overall look of the product, because you see this stupidity and that's all people want to talk about. And again, like you mentioned, Joe losing this comes off as such a damn loser, especially after Miz has lost to Rollins already, which that had to happen because you're keeping the IC title on Raw. So Joe needed to win this match, but Roman Reigns needed to win it as well, because the narrative they're playing with him about how he's constantly losing the big matches, but it is what it is. So why not just add another one to the resume? Shit. Does that make it where he's losing and snapping? Just use it to your benefit.
Yeah, it's...
I don't know. It's just frustrating. But you know what? I mean, this shit happens. I mean, God knows we've been watching WWE for all our lives, and they have this these times where they get so frustrating to watch creatively. It's just like, ugh. You know, 2015 Raw was like one of those time periods when it was just fucking a slog to get through their shows.
Yeah, it was.
Just a total slog. So, I don't know. I don't know. So maybe somebody come to their senses. Now that the brand split is in full effect, we don't have these cross promotion deals anymore like Miz working Rollins and Joe against Roman. Now everybody's on their own shows. Maybe we can, you know, have something happen now to change it up a little bit. But I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what to say. I really don't. Other than this was a piece of shit show in the end. So I guess that gives you the answer to the question on my end, at least on thumbs down, thumbs up, and thumbs in the middle. This is a total thumbs down show.
Oh, yes. Total thumbs down for me, too. It was boring, which is a lot of ways the worst part about it. It was boring.
Yes.
I mean, sometimes bad shows can be entertaining for how bad they are. This was boring, man. This was just boring. definite thumbs down, which is a shame because the Rumble was a great show this year, and Elimination Chamber was a great show, and then we have this, you know, these next, you know, a bad Mania and a bad follow up.
Yeah. It's interesting because, God, remember past years when the pay-per-view after Mania was always this kick ass fucking show that was always better than Mania?
Yeah. Yep.
Not this year. Very and Mania awesome. Wasn't a great show.
Oh, no. Nope. Definitely not this year.
Oh, my God. Oh, well, we got 6 more weeks. So, heaven help us. Heaven help us. hopefully in 6 weeks, we'll be more glowing in our praise on the Money in the Bank show. Which, it's real hard to fuck up Money in the Bank. Because you got the ladder matches, it is. Which are always going to have some wild shit.
It's Chicago.
In Chicago. So it's going to be real hard to fuck that show up. But I don't put it past them. And God forbid if they do, if they put Brock and Roman together again as a world title match.
Oh, God.
Ooh, buddy.
they need... These 6 weeks are big because it's the spring storylines, angles... that are going to lead into the summer. And it's 6 weeks that we're finally going to get the brand identities. You know, we're finally going to establish the new brand identities for the year. Backlash. GRR really caused a problem, but even without the GRR, Backlash or the pay-per-view after Mania is often a problem because it's always a limbo show where there's co-branded matches and shit. And you've got all this, you got the shakeup and the drafts and stuff, and nothing ever gets established, and these dynamics are never set in stone yet because you have to fart around with this stupid, annoying show right in the middle. So I, in a way, I'm really glad it was good or bad, because now we can sort of see how things are going to develop on each brand now that that's out of the way.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. Well, that's it for us. We'll be back in 6 weeks for Money in the Bank, so pray for us. Devin, thanks as always for being on the show.
Absolutely.
And this is Chris, and so long from the Peach State of Georgia.